now to the serious business of crime, and we continue the real-life trials of Sir Edward Marshall Hall. Today, what looks like a nasty bit of poisoning in a pretty open-and-shut case could in fact be nothing of the sort.
John Mortimer presents The Trials of Marshall Hall. True stories from the archives of Britain's most celebrated criminal barrister, starring Tom Baker as Sir Edward Marshall Hall. Introduced by John Mortimer.
Mrs. Mifanwy Jones freewheels her bicycle the last few yards to the Kidwerry village store. She's come for her weekly shop, but along with the twist-wrapped sugar and the pats of butter, Mrs. Jones has come to collect something equally delicious, gossip. And in this village, 12 miles from Carmarthen, on this spring morning in 1920, the gossip is particularly rich and tasty.
How are you today, Mr. Llewellyn?
Ah, can't complain. Little older, no wiser. And yourself, Mrs. Jones?
Better than some at my age.
Oh, I should say so, Mrs. Jones.
Better than poor Mrs. Greenwood, anyway.
Oh, don't mention that poor woman. But I tell you something, it happened the other day. Now, she comes in here, face like alabaster, eyes red with tears. I says, well, tell me, I said, what's upset you? Oh, she says, it's my husband. Well, what's he done? I said, you know, just trying to be neighbourly like.
What did she say?
He's never there, she says.
Never where?
At home, she says, and then, damn me, she practically faints away.
Mrs. Jones manages to increase her store of gossip in the company of her niece, Hannah Williams, who also happens to be the Greenwoods' maid.
More cake, Hannah, my love.
No, thank you, Auntie.
Still rest off your feet, are you, at the Greenwoods?
I'm up and down those stairs all day, and that's the truth.
Oh, I bet you are, what with poor Mrs. Greenwood ill all the time. Her husband helps out, does he?
Help? Be better if he didn't bother sometimes the way he carries on.
Carries on?
Hammer and tongs, Auntie. Like the war it is.
I hear someone say he's been seen with Gladys Griffiths.
That's his piano teacher.
He's teaching him more than piano. Not that I approve of gossip.
What were they doing then?
Holding hands, would you believe? Broad daylight, but don't let it go any further.
Oh, Auntie, my lips are sealed.
More cake, my love.
Poor Mrs. Greenwood.
Breathe in.
A frequent visitor at the house is Dr. Griffiths, good, the piano teacher's brother.
Breathe out. That's fine. Well, chess sounds all right, Mrs. Greenwood. Are you taking exercise, though?
I don't feel like it.
Well, you should. Try to get out. This Saturday, there's a tennis tournament at the club.
I don't know.
Walk over. It'll do you a power of good.
I'll see. I've run out of the pills you give me.
Pills are not what you need.
They help me.
All right. But remember, fresh air and exercise. You'll soon be right as rain.
Sometimes I think I'll never be well again.
Now, that's no way to talk. What makes you say that?
I don't know. It's how I feel.
Thank you for coming, Doctor.
Your wife needs taking out of herself, Mr. Greenwood.
Hmm.
Well, that's my advice.
I'm very grateful.
And something else.
Yes?
Tongues are beginning to wag about you and my sister.
Are they? She's giving me piano lessons.
I know.
She's a piano teacher. I wish to learn the piano.
Now, I'm only mentioning it
because...
Good
God, I need to get out of this house sometimes.
I understand that. And that's the trouble with living in a place like this. Gossip. You can't survive it.
So what are you saying?
There'll be no more piano lessons.
Hannah Williams brings in the roast lamb and vegetables on a tray. Sunday lunch at the Greenwoods always taxes her skills to the utmost, especially today, with another place to set. Irene, the Greenwood's daughter, has come to stay.
I do not spend all my evenings at business meetings.
Please don't,
most of them.
Oh, nonsense.
3 or 4 a week.
Shh, Hannah's coming.
Hannah, you may put the tray down. My husband will carve.
Yes, ma'am. Will I serve you vegetables?
Little. Hardly anything.
Enough.
Mummy, try to eat a bit more.
No, I couldn't. My stomach is bad today.
That isn't enough to feed a sparrow.
Leave her.
But...
Leave her. Your mother knows what she wants, don't you, dear?
I don't care. Whatever happens to me...
Please, don't stop.
Whatever happens, it doesn't matter to you. It doesn't matter.
During the afternoon, Mrs. Greenwood complains of sickness and diarrhoea. The doctor is called.
What is the matter with her?
Food poisoning, most likely. I've prepared a bismuth mixture. Give it to her with water every 2 hours.
She'll be all right, won't she?
Oh, yes. Nothing to worry about.
But by late evening, it's clear that Mrs. Greenwood is seriously ill.
She's sleeping now.
I'm worried, Daddy. I'm worried.
The doctor knows what he's doing. I'm absolutely certain of that.
Daddy? Oh, Daddy? No.
At his wife's funeral, the villagers note, Mr. Greenwood shows no emotion. And when, 4 months later, he marries the piano teacher, the gossip becomes deafening. Indignant, angry and suspicious, they demand redress from that potent symbol of civic righteousness, the law.
Mr. Harold Greenwood?
Yes?
Inspector Talbot from Carmarthen Police Station. We're carrying out inquiries into your first wife's death.
What do you mean? My wife died of heart failure. Haven't you read the death certificate?
I am aware of what Dr. Griffiths wrote, but I have to tell you there may be new evidence in the case.
What new evidence?
Well, I can inform you that your wife's body has been exhumed for examination. Would you get your coat?
2 days later, a tall, thin man enters Three Temple Gardens, the chambers of Sir Edward Marshall Hall. It's Arthur Newton, the solicitor, who approaches the familiar oak door.
Mustin.
Mr. Newton.
Is your master here?
Sir Edward has 2 appointments this morning, both out of the office.
He's busy?
You have a brief under your arm, I see, sir.
But if he's busy...
Neither of his appointments are legal matters. He's gone to see the doctor, sir.
Not ill, I hope.
Nothing serious. And then he's visiting a silversmith. Shall I take him the brief, sir?
If you would. A little bird told me there are troubles at home.
Home?
Che Marshall Hall.
I couldn't say, Mr. Newton.
No? It's just that I heard it said his young daughter is creating a certain friction between himself and his good lady wife.
Just idle gossip.
Quite.
I never listened to it.
No.
In fact, if you hear any more of it, sir...
Yes?
Could you tell the person spreading such rumours that you hope they enjoy a long, slow death? With complications?
Yes, quite. The brief.
What is it, sir?
R versus Harold Greenwood. It's at Carmarthen.
Mostyn finds Sir Edward at the silversmith's in Great Titchfield Street, his head only inches from a row of 18th-century spittoons.
Sir?
Where?
Carmarthen, sir.
I see. Isn't this lovely? Do you like George II silver, Mostyn?
Yes, sir. I've made inquiries about accommodation, but it's proving extremely difficult. Practically all the hotel rooms are filled.
Why? What's going on?
The trial. People are being turned away. I spoke to the clerk of the court. He's never seen anything like it.
It's a degenerate society that allows serious trials to be an aspect of its entertainment industry, don't you think, Mostyn?
I'm sorry I was so long, Sir Edward. I thought the tankards were to hand. What do you think of this one?
No.
What?
Overpriced, Mr. Trilling. Perhaps when I return from Wales.
Oh, would that be the Greenwood trial?
Well, well.
With respect, Sir Edward, you'll never get him off.
Is that what you think?
Sir Edward, I really think we should be going now. I'll tell you what, Sir Edward. This silver tankard, if you get this fellow Greenwood off, I'll give it to you.
Give it?
Yes. A sort of wager. Sir.
I accept. Mostyn, you are my witness.
Sir Edward sweeps through the mock Gothic gates of Carmarthen Jail like a knight riding to the rescue of a small country solicitor charged with poisoning his wife.
Mr. Greenwood.
Yes?
I think we need to establish...
I am the victim of village gossip. Do you know Welsh village life? It all started from the fact that 4 months after my wife's death, I married again. They couldn't forgive me.
Did you have anything to do with your wife's death?
Absolutely not. She died of heart failure. It's on the certificate.
And afterwards, what happened to her private means?
Everything went to her children.
You benefited not a penny from her estate?
No, this is ridiculous.
Ridiculous or not, we have to establish the bedrock of our case if we are to stand... if we are to stand firm. Do you understand?
I think I do understand. I am a solicitor.
And you may have done better to have opted for trial in Cardiff or even London.
Are we to be swayed by popular opinion?
Of course not.
I chose to stand trial here in their midst for this one reason. I wanted to show them that they are wrong and to see their faces when I am found innocent.
Sir Edward.
Mostyn.
May I have a word, sir?
Yes.
Outside. I've just come from the post-mortem, sir.
They weren't keen to give me the result, but I insisted you authorised it.
Quite right.
They found arsenic in her body.
How much?
The equivalent of a quarter of a grain. Very little, apparently.
But enough to kill, and administered when?
The last meal, sir.
What?
They had lunch together on the Sunday.
Greenwood and his wife?
And the daughter, sir.
Hmm?
Irene, her name is.
She was with them?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Greenwood, the results of the post-mortem on your wife show a small but significant quantity of arsenic.
What?
Can you account for it?
Absolutely not. The doctor said...
That will be different now.
But how can they change the... I can't account for it, no.
I would like to call your daughter as a witness.
No.
Why not?
I don't want her standing up in front of those people to give them the satisfaction.
You must understand, unless I'm mistaken, she will prove a key defense witness. To leave her out would be absolute madness.
You are not to call her. Do you understand?
The trial is held in the Guildhall, Carmarthen. Expectant faces from all over the county await the appearance of a legend. And into this bear garden, the legend, limping slightly from an agonizing bout of phlebitis, steps. He rises to cross-examine Sir William Wilcox, a ruddy-faced gentleman in tweeds.
As a Home Office analyst, Sir William, would you explain to the court the experiment upon which calculations of the quantity of arsenic in the body is based?
It is a chemical process by which arsenic is extracted from a minute specimen of a part of the body in the form of a gas.
I see. So, for example, from a minute part of the stomach, a minute proportion of arsenic is collected.
Then the proportion of arsenic is multiplied proportionately to the total weight of, in this case, the stomach, you said, and in this way, the total amount of arsenic found in the stomach is calculated.
And so you proceed through all the component parts of the body?
Yes.
Would it be true that any initial error made in the experiment itself would be multiplied hundreds, or in the case of some parts of the body, thousands of times in the calculation that followed it?
Yes, if an error was made.
Yet despite this, you have given the confident opinion that Mrs. Greenwood's death was by arsenical poisoning.
Yes.
Are you still of that opinion?
I am. In my opinion, approximately the minimum fatal dose had been administered, yes.
So the question we must answer is how the arsenic entered her body.
That is not for me to say.
No, you're right. That is for the prosecution to say, and say it they must.
Hannah Williams, the Greenwood's maid, is now in the witness box, looking extremely hot. She dabs her cheeks with a tiny handkerchief.
Miss Williams.
Yes, sir?
I want you to remember that last meal you served for the Greenwood family on that fateful Sunday. Could you do that?
Yes, sir.
Good. So, lunchtime Sunday the 15th of June. What were the family eating?
Normal, sir. A joint of meat, vegetables and a gooseberry tart.
Mm-hmm. And did all the members of the family eat a meal?
Well, Mrs. Greenwood didn't eat much, but she did eat.
She ate that day. And their daughter was present?
Yes.
And all ate, all shared the same food, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And to drink?
Mr. Greenwood had a whiskey before, and there was a bottle of wine on the table.
Wine?
Yes, sir.
Which, again, they all shared?
No, sir. Only Mrs. Greenwood had the wine.
Only Mrs. Greenwood?
Yes, sir.
Neither her husband nor her daughter drank from that bottle of wine. And do you remember what happened to the wine afterwards?
No, sir.
Why not?
I put it in the larder, but later on that evening, when I was preparing tea, I remember the bottle had gone.
Who went into that larder?
Only me and cook.
You didn't see anyone else go in there?
Yes, sir. I saw Mr. Greenwood go in after lunch.
I see.
And he saw me and he said, I'm just going in to wash my hands.
That was not a normal practice?
Sorry?
He didn't normally do this?
He never done it before.
And soon after you noticed the bottle was missing?
That's right.
Thank you, Miss Williams. Sir Edward will now, no doubt, want to ask you some questions.
Are you a teetotaler, Miss Williams?
Sorry?
Do you drink?
I don't understand.
I mean, do you drink wine? Do you drink it? Do you?
I
think you understand the question.
I have drunk it. I'm not drunk today.
Very well. Miss Williams, you have shown an impressive memory after all this time. Will you tell the court what kind of wine was drunk by Mrs. Greenwood?
Port wine.
Port wine. With the meal.
That's right.
Whoever heard of that? A little touch of the domestic servant. And how many wine glasses did you put on the table?
One.
One?
For Mrs. Greenwood.
In your statement you made to the police, you said two glasses were laid. Two pink glasses, not one.
I'm not sure then.
Were you nervous when the police asked you to make a statement?
I was.
It's natural to be nervous in police company, and to wish to please them is also, no doubt, natural.
Sir Edward.
Isn't it true that Mr. Greenwood often washed his hands in the larder?
Isn't it
possible that he did? And isn't it possible that after all this time, you have forgotten exactly what happened?
I suppose it is.
Juries are always quiet when they're worried, and this one is very quiet indeed. Dr. Griffiths, a florid man with straying grey hair, comes into the witness box.
Dr. Griffiths, you were the Greenwood family doctor, is that correct?
That's correct.
It's true to say, isn't it, that Mrs. Greenwood had a number of minor illnesses and complaints?
Yes.
But as a family doctor, were you surprised when she died so suddenly?
Yes, I was.
You were not expecting such a thing?
No, no, she had no reason there was no reason to anticipate a sudden collapse at all.
Could you, for the benefit of the jury, describe her actions on the Sunday in question and then on the next day?
Her husband contacted me about late afternoon and said that his wife was complaining of sickness and diarrhea. I sent over some medicine, a bismuth mixture. He contacted me again at about 11 o'clock at night to say his wife was worse. I went to see her and gave her morphia pills. She lapsed into a coma soon after that and died at approximately 3:30 in the morning.
Thank you, Dr. Griffiths.
Dr. Griffiths, you administered morphia pills.
That is correct.
Was that not dangerous?
No.
Morphia pills containing morphine, was that not dangerous to a woman in Mrs. Greenwood's weakened condition?
No.
Each morphia pill contains, am I not right, half a grain of pure morphine?
Yes, but... Oh, not... I don't mean morphia.
You said morphia.
I know. I meant opium. Opium pills are often called morphia because they contain morphia.
You said that in your opinion, there would have been no danger in giving this woman two half grains of pure morphia.
I meant two half grains of pure opium.
I give every allowance to every witness who says what I don't expect him to say. Have you the smallest doubt whatever that if you as a medical man were accurate when you said that you gave her two half grains of morphia after 10 o'clock, that she would have been dead before 4 o'clock?
If I had given her morphia, she would. But I did not give her morphia. I gave her two pills of opium, and each pill contains only 1/40th of a grain of morphia.
Do you have your prescription book?
No, I don't.
Why not?
I retired last year, and I must have destroyed it.
Why was it destroyed?
I don't remember.
So you can't give us the prescription for the tonic you gave to Mrs. Greenwood earlier in the evening?
Sir Edward.
Yes, my lord?
Do you have any more questions for Dr. Griffiths?
A very few. If I may just...
I would then prefer you left them until tomorrow.
I would prefer to finish them today.
Until tomorrow, members of the jury.
Oh.
How's your leg, sir?
Nothing but 4-mile drive in this bumping taxi won't inflame. I shall have to sit tomorrow. How are we to pick up with this Dr. Griffiths, this good, solid character, eh? I'd like to pierce him just to see the fur fly.
Sir?
Yes?
My sister works in a dispensing chemist on the Charing Cross Road. Well, what if... It's really continuing your idea of mistaking two drugs. I mean, how does the doctor strike you?
Weak. Look at the way he gave a cause of death without a second opinion.
So there's a chance he may be incompetent?
Perhaps.
Should I telephone my sister, sir?
Dr. Griffiths, could you tell me what Fowler's solution of arsenic looks like?
It's a reddish liquid.
I wondered if you'd help me to identify the contents of this bottle. Is arsenic solution anything at all like this?
Yes, that's right. It's red, yes. That's arsenic solution you have there.
Could you read the label on the bottle, Doctor? Please pass this to the witness. Thank you. Doctor, what does the label say? Dr. Griffiths?
Sir Edward, I must protest.
A man's life is at stake, sir. Read the label, Doctor.
Bismuth.
I beg your pardon.
Bismuth.
the same colour as arsenic, bismuth, which you gave to Mrs. Greenwood 5 hours before she died.
Are you accusing the doctor of gross incompetence?
No, my lord.
You're not?
Certainly not. I am merely pointing out to the court an alternative hypothesis for how arsenic may have entered the body of the deceased.
You are waving accusations around the court like flags.
Not at all. I am discussing the degrees of improbability which I consider it my job to do, and which the jury need to be mindful of throughout every aspect of this case. I have no more questions for this witness.
Was that a red herring or a sprat to catch a mackerel, sir?
Marston, please, the tribes are gathered against us. Only one thing will save him. Go and hail a taxi and bring my cushion. Mr. Greenwood, I cannot promise a successful result tomorrow unless you allow me to put your daughter into the witness box.
I've said no.
Yes, you've said no, but you must consider the consequences. At the moment the jury are weighing the possibilities. I feel they are against us. They think you killed your wife in order to free yourself from your first marriage. Many of the men on the jury will have contemplated a similar course of action. For all I know, they may wish to punish you for actually going ahead and doing it.
I didn't do it!
Then give me proof. Now, normally, it's not my job to prove innocence, but in this case, in this place, I believe it is. Well? You are Miss Irene Greenwood.
Yes, sir.
You are the prisoner's daughter, is that correct?
Yes.
Miss Greenwood, I need to recall some incidents which I'm sure are very painful to you.
Yes, sir.
You are not to feel in any way embarrassed by being here, but just tell the court in as full a detail as you can what happened on that Sunday, the 15th of June. You were at lunch with your father and mother. What did you talk about?
You mean during the meal?
Yes.
We talked about my mother's appetite, or lack of it. We often discussed that. My daddy was worried about her.
Did you talk about anything else?
My mother was hoping to organise a tennis competition in the village. The day before, she had attended a tennis club in the next village and was keen to do something similar.
How was your mother feeling?
She was quite happy. In fact, when she wasn't feeling ill, she was a kind, good mother. It was her illnesses that changed her. In many ways, I can see now, she had a lot to put up with.
You remember the details of the conversation that took place over a year ago?
Yes, every word.
How can you be so confident of that?
It was the day my mother died.
Yes, of course. Can you remember that meal you had on that Sunday?
Yes.
You all sat down together?
Yes.
What did you eat?
Roast lamb, vegetables, and gooseberry tart.
Which you ate together?
Of course.
Of course. Do you remember there being a bottle of wine on the table?
Yes, it was a bottle of Burgundy.
A bottle of Burgundy wine, which your mother drank a glass of, did she?
Yes.
Now think carefully. Did anybody else drink from that bottle?
I did.
Silence! I will have silence in this court.
You drank from that bottle of wine?
Yes.
Are you absolutely sure?
Yes, I clinked glasses with my mother. I toasted her health.
No further questions, my lord.
You've clinched it, sir.
Not quite.
But near enough to keep the final speech short, Sir Edward.
In the land of oratory, Mostyn? Gentlemen, you have got to have evidence that this man administered arsenic to this woman, knowing he had all to lose by doing it, and nothing to gain, and in the absence of any possible motive to suggest why he should do so. If you are satisfied he did it, then you will find him guilty. But if you are not satisfied, if you feel that the evidence against him amounts to no more than jealousy and surmise, and scientific evidence camouflaged as scientific proof, then you are bound to say that he is not guilty. I beg you to remember one thing. Your verdict is final, necessarily final. Put out the light, and then put out the light. If I quench thee, thou flaming minister, I can again thy former light restore, should I repent me. But once put out thy light, thou cunningest pattern of excelling nature, I know not where is that Promethean heat that can thy light relume. Are you, by your verdict, going to put out that light? Gentlemen of the jury, I demand at your hands the life and liberty of Harold Greenwood. Mr. Trilling, come out, sir. I'm stealing all your silverware. Ho, shopkeeper.
Sir Edward, I recognized your voice. Back from Wales?
Evidently. You've read the evening newspapers.
I haven't had a chance to yet.
Here, read mine.
Greenwood, not guilty verdict in Marshall Hall triumph. Oh, well, congratulations, sir.
Mr. Trilling, it embarrasses me to have to remind you, but...
Here it is, sir. One silver tankard.
Oh, Mr. Trilling, will you inscribe it for me?
Certainly, sir. Something victorious.
No, a line from Robert Burns, I think. Got a pencil?
Yes, sir.
There's death in the cup, so beware.
Great barristers, like great surgeons, make jokes, sometimes macabre jokes, to relieve the almost unbearable tension of their work. Family worries threaten to overwhelm even Marshall Hall's spirits, and no one expects a death at Christmas.
John Mortimer presented The Trials of Marshall Hall, dramatised by Michael Butt and directed by John Taylor, with Tom Baker as Sir Edward Marshall Hall, and featuring Timothy Block, Jonathan Taffler, Christopher Scott, Robert Blythe, Lucy Jenkins and Zela Clark. The Trials of Marshall Hall is a Fiction Factory production for Radio 2.